MedStar Washington Hospital Center presents Medical Intel, the inside story of advances in healthcare that can make a difference for you and your patients. Here's Melanie Cole.
The standard initial treatment for symptomatic cervical disc disease typically involves physical therapy, medications, and occasional spinal injection procedures. If the symptoms continue and are very bothersome for more than 6 to 12 weeks, surgical treatment might be considered. My guest today is Dr. Oliver Tanous. He's an orthopedic spine surgeon and a member of MedStar Orthopedic Institute at MedStar Washington Hospital Center. Welcome to the show, Dr. Tanous. What's typically been done for cervical disc disease and issues?
Hi, Melanie. Thanks for having me. So once patients have already failed conservative care, so they failed physical therapy, injections, they've given the time, they continue to have symptoms in their disc disease, the standard of care for the past 30 years has been a discectomy and a fusion, meaning what you do is you go in, you take out the disc, you take out whatever's pinching on the nerve, you relieve the pressure off the nerve, and now instead of the disc being there, there's a big space, you put a piece of bone, and then over time, the patient's natural bone at the level above and level below fuses into the bone graft that you put into the patient. It's called a fusion, or an ACDF, which stands for an anterior cervical discectomy and fusion. And that still today in 2017 is the gold standard for cervical degenerative disc disease. But the caveat to that is that there's new technology now for cervical disc replacements that are showing extremely promising results over the past 10 years. And there's a movement now towards trying to treat cervical disc disease in some patients with a disc replacement as opposed to a fusion.
So tell us about the disc replacement. Who might be a good candidate for this?
People who are the best candidates for a fusion are typically patients who are going to be between the ages of 30 and 60. They can't have a lot of arthritis. The problem with arthritis is that it limits motion and it makes things more stiff. And so if you think about the spine, there are essentially two parts of the spine. There's the front part, which is in front of the spinal cord. There's the back part, which are the facet joints, which are behind the spinal cord. So when we do a discectomy, it's the front of the spine. We're taking the disc out from the front. But you have to understand that we're not going after the facet joints in the back. And so in patients who have normal-looking facet joints, they're great candidates in general for a disc replacement because they're going to have normal motion in the joints in the back. But if you're too old or if you have too much arthritis and the facet joints are too arthritic, typically most surgeons today will do a fusion as opposed to disc replacement because you don't want to increase the range of motion through an arthritic joint. It will just cause neck pain.
So then speak in the disc replacement about motion preservation and adjacent segment disease and how this changes that.
Absolutely. So a little bit about adjacent segment disease. So in its simplest definition, if you think about doing a fusion, is you have seven levels in the neck that are moving. And so when you do a fusion, if you lock up that level by doing a fusion, now the motion that would have otherwise been absorbed by that level goes to the level above or the level below. So you increase the stress that's being experienced at the levels above or the level below. So when patients come in, they have degenerative discs, and typically they'll have it at multiple levels, but we only go after the one level that's being symptomatic. When you fuse that, now discs above it or below it that already have some level of degeneration, the process accelerates the degeneration of the discs above it with the discs below it. So it's called adjacent segment disease. And overall, the rate's about 2.5 to 3% per year of increased degeneration, meaning at 10 years, 25% of people who've already had a fusion will need a fusion at the level above it or below it because of its symptomatic disease at those levels. So that's where the concept of a disc replacement came in. The theory is if you put a disc replacement and maintain the range of motion of the spine, you eliminate that increased stress that gets absorbed at the level above it or the level below it. And so that's the concept of adjacent segment disease.
And based on this theory, what's recovery like for patients for cervical disc replacement?
In my experience, patients who have disc replacements recover a lot faster. I don't put them in a brace. In fact, you don't want to put patients in a brace after disc replacement because you want them moving through the implant. You want them to preserve that range of motion of the neck, and you don't want them getting stiff. Versus when patients have a fusion, you put them in a brace, and most surgeons will put patients in a brace from anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks because you want to lock up that level. You want the spine to fuse, and you don't want to increase the motion through that segment while things are healing. So in my experience, the recovery rate for disc replacement is much quicker. I've had patients go back to work within 3 to 4 days after the surgery. They typically leave the hospital the morning after having had the surgery. And I've seen incredible results with the disc replacement.
So tell us about the FDA approval process for it.
So you have to understand anterior cervical discectomy and fusion, so ACDFs, meaning the anterior fusion, has been the gold standard for the past 30, 40, 50 years, and it still is today the gold standard because it is an extremely successful procedure. So in spine surgery, it's arguably the most successful surgery in the spine world. And so in order for the FDA to approve a disc replacement, you have to at least show that a disc replacement is not inferior to the standard of care, which is cervical discectomies and fusions. And so in the 2000s, several companies started studying this through IDE trials that got approved by the FDA, meaning they allowed them to test these implants for the specific purpose of getting them FDA approved. And these were randomized, prospective, multi-center, level one studies that were sort of overseen by the FDA. So as far as orthopedics research is concerned, these are the most meticulous studies in the orthopedic and the spine literature because they have to be because they're being scrutinized by the FDA. And so in the 2000s, they studied one-level disc replacement, and overall what they found is that there was some trend that the disc replacements were superior to fusions with regards to patient outcomes, with regards to pain improvement, with regards to subsequent surgeries for adjacent segment disease. They didn't find that most of these were statistically significantly greater, but at least what they found was that they were definitely not inferior to fusions. And so that prompted the FDA in sort of the mid to late 2000s to approve one-level disc replacement for multiple companies. And again, they found that they couldn't find a statistically significant increase in adjacent segment surgery between one or the other for one level. Now for two-level disc replacement, and now so far two companies have been approved for it, one this past summer and one back in 2013 for two-level disc replacement. And both of these show actually pretty impressive results. So for two-level fusion versus two-level disc replacement, the reoperation rate, meaning you have to go back to the OR because either you didn't fuse or now you have another disc that's degenerative or you have some complication from the surgery, for two-level disc replacement, the reoperation rate is 16% versus 4%, and that's for one company. For the other company, they found the reoperation rate for two-level fusion 15% versus 4% for two-level disc replacement. So, and these are statistically significant numbers, so some potentially very promising data, and these are 5 to 7 year results with both of these companies, with both of these implants. And then the rate of adjacent segment disease for one implant for two levels, for two-level fusion, the rate of adjacent segment disease was 11% versus only 3% for disc replacement. And for the other one, it was 12.5% for fusion versus 6.5% for a disc replacement. So these numbers are very promising. We're now at the 7 year mark for some of these two-level disc replacement studies, and they're showing very promising results with very low complication rates for these implants. So in my opinion, I think for a younger patient who doesn't have a lot of arthritis in the back and the neck, who doesn't have cervical deformity, who doesn't have any other contraindications, I think a two-level disc replacement might be a better way to go than a two-level fusion.
And what are some indications for referral? You just mentioned a few, but continue along that line and wrap it up for us with your best advice about cervical disc replacement.
What I tell my patients, and I tell every patient this before every surgery, is that as a spine surgeon, I'm best at treating arm pain or leg pain. So when the nerve is being pinched and now you have disease in the spine that's causing pain to travel down your arm or your leg, there's a 90 to 95% chance or more that I can make that pain go away as a surgeon. When patients come in and they say that they have predominantly just neck pain without the arm symptoms, I don't have a great surgery for that, unfortunately, because there's so many things that can cause neck pain. So really, I think the best candidates for a cervical disc replacement or cervical spine surgery in general are ones who are going to have predominantly arm symptoms because the nerve is being pinched, as opposed to the ones who aren't as good candidates or the ones who have predominantly neck symptoms without the nerve symptoms. And I tell that to every single one of my patients, and I really stress that in the clinic before the surgery, and I emphasize that right before we go back to the operating, because they have to understand what the goals of the surgery are. It's to relieve arm pain and not neck pain in general.
And what would you like to tell other physicians, Dr. Tanous, about adopting this procedure and looking at some of those numbers you mentioned?
Well, first and foremost, I want to really stress that, as in everything else in spine surgery, the best approach is a conservative approach. And so I treat 95%+ of my patients with the utmost conservative care, meaning we try everything that we can before we talk about surgery because most patients get better without surgery. Now, once they're surgical candidates and they failed everything else, again, you have to understand that this isn't technology that is already been proven to be far superior. It's promising, but the standard of care today still is a fusion. So but there's some very promising data out there to show that disc replacements are going to be the way of the future. And so as with everything else, you don't just jump right into it. It's a discussion with the patient. The patients have to understand the risks, the benefits, the alternatives, and try everything possible before talking about going in under general anesthesia and having a procedure done.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tanous, for being with us today. You're listening to Medical Intel with MedStar Washington Hospital Center. And for more information, you can go to MedStarWashington.org. That's MedStarWashington.org. This is Melanie Call. Thanks so much for listening.